Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A 19-year-old Penn State student dead after a night of pledging rituals at his fraternity. 18 of his fraternity brothers now charged, 8 with involuntary manslaughter. Hazing on college campuses is back in the spotlight after years of anti-hazing awareness campaigns, videos, speeches. Colleges struggle to find the right way. This hour On Point, the death of Tim Piazza and hazing now on American college campuses. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Will the hazing ever stop? Can you have Greek life, fraternities, sororities, without it? And how might it be reined in? Were you, have you been, hazed? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was the call. This was 12 hours after Timothy Piazza first got in trouble back in February. This was at Penn State. And this was Ryan McCann, a member of the Beta Theta Pi fraternity, calling 911. He didn't mention a fall that Tim Piazza had taken to the operator, but here's some of that call.
What's going on today?
We have a friend who is unconscious. He hasn't moved. His cold extremity is probably in an ambulance.
Okay, how old is he?
He is 19.
Yeah,
19 years old.
And was he breathing?
He is breathing.
Was there any alcohol or anything involved, do you know?
Yes, there is.
Oh, yes, there was alcohol. Yes, he was breathing, but he would not for long. Tim Piazza died. Joining me today first from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is Charles Thompson, reporter with Penn Live. He's been covering the Penn State hazing incident and the legal aftermath. Charles Thompson, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom.
Can you describe what happened on the night of this incident?
Sure. Very basically, Timothy Piazza, a Penn State sophomore, was accepting a bid to join the Beta Theta Pi fraternity at Penn State, and that's one of the star fraternities on campus, with a rambling brick sort of mini mansion right in the heart of the campus. On February 2nd of this year, they had a bid acceptance night where all the incoming members were formally and ritually welcomed into the fraternity. What part of that involved was sort of a drinking ritual. I think it's been characterized as sort of like an obstacle course kind of thing known as the gauntlet, where part of the point of it is, to put it bluntly, is to get those pledges hammered in kind of a, surely what was meant to be in sort of a celebratory, camaraderie building kind of way, that obviously went horribly wrong.
I'm reading here in what ultimately were legal indictments about them being forced to drink beer, wine, vodka, a whole lot at a very fast rate. This was the gauntlet.
Right.
Including shotgunning beers when you're chugging out of a hole in the side of the can and all that jazz.
Exactly. And that morphed into a general fraternity party. So within the space of about an hour, maybe an hour and a half, Tim Piazza and a lot of the brothers at Beta Theta Pi got terrifically drunk, and it had fatal consequences for Piazza. He fell down a flight of stairs at the fraternity that led into like a basement party room there at about 10:45 the night of February 2nd. Brothers saw it, were aware of it immediately. I think the initial response was that he had a drunken fall. Let's get him up and put him on a couch and let him sleep it off. He'll come around. But it kind of descended into kind of a malicious neglect over the next 12 hours. And Piazza's condition worsened. A lot of this was captured on a fraternity surveillance system located in the fraternity house. And I mean, we can go over some of the details of that if you like. But
yes, please. I mean, it was a long time he sat there. He turned gray on that video surveillance film, and still hours going by and no call for help.
And there were more falls, and you know, the tape captures, you know, at least 10 encounters where brothers at various times tried to splash water in his face, you know, punch him in the stomach. I mean, these
5 a.m. he gets up again and falls headfirst into an iron railing, lands on a stone floor, gets up again, tries to go to the front door, falls headfirst into the door. I mean,
he had moved around some during this time and likely only worsened his condition. They believe at about 7 o'clock he took another spill down those basement steps, which are kind of out of the camera view. And finally, then at like 10 the next morning, he was discovered on the basement floor in kind of what I think in layman's terms you might describe in sort of a comatose state. And after about another 40 minutes passed, they finally placed that call for emergency help.
Here was Tim Piazza's dad. This was at a press conference in Bellefonte, Pennsylvania on Friday as the indictments came down against 18 fraternity brothers. Here was Jim Piazza, the father.
This didn't have to happen. This is the result of a feeling of entitlement, flagrant disobedience of the law, and disregard for moral values that was then exacerbated by egregious acts of self-preservation.
Jim Piazza, father Tim Piazza, saying the loss of his son, 19 years old, a sophomore at Penn State, who had just been going through the rituals at the fraternity, the loss, his death, devastating.
Many of the people he touched in his life, in his high school days and in his college days that visited with us over the past 3 months, have told us that he may have been the nicest person they have ever met and that he was just an outstanding person.
A night of extreme drunkenness, hazing, bringing in the new pledges. I mean, and then we got charges here of evidence tampering for trying to sort of dress up Piazza before the ambulance came. At one point, maybe an effort at intervention. You had Penn State students Cordell Davis, another pledge. He was on Good Morning America Monday explaining that how he'd reacted when he saw Tim Piazza lying there passed out on the couch and why he didn't do more to help him. Here was the other pledge, Cordell Davis.
I'm screaming. I'm very, like, I'm being very obvious with my thoughts. And, you know, I was kind of like, shut up. I got thrown against the wall. I didn't know what to do after that. I felt kind of useless. And I felt like I had no say in the situation.
No say in the situation, trying to intervene. Charles Thompson's covering all this for Penn Live. He's with us from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And this was a moment when another, you know, young guy there tried to intervene. That didn't work out. And the alleged reason for that is that Jonah Newman, this is another 19-year-old from Nashville, Tennessee, star wrestler in high school. He's captured on the video, I guess, pushing Cordell Davis into a wall at that point. And he's now among those charged with involuntary manslaughter, Charles?
Right. Yeah, Cordell Davis was the first that we know of who urged everybody to call an ambulance for him. Jonah Newman told him to get out of there, pushed him into the wall, said they had it under control. There was another, this detail had kind of gotten lost in the presentment. There was another member who put out a text message urging that to some members that an ambulance be called about 2:20, and that was met with a response that, oh, you're being over dramatic. See, you know, and what this case is going to turn on is did these guys know what they were dealing with, or did they legitimately think that this was just a drunk who had to sleep it off? And you know, the defense is going to be making the case that This is certainly a tragedy, but it was not an intended result, and nor could anybody ever even have foreseen it as a possibility. The prosecution is going to counter with the evidence that they've picked up from text messages, from the videotape, and from witness testimony now that says, look, you can tell that as the evening progressed, there were people on scene there that that seemed to grasp the seriousness of the situation. The fact that they didn't do more, whether it was out of self-preservation or shock or whatever, is criminal negligence, and that should lead to a involuntary manslaughter conviction.
It's a pretty fierce lineup of legal charges here. 18 charged. We'll look at whether this is a new trend, more criminal charges in this kind of situation. Of course, a young man is dead. What's right. the range of charges now on the table?
Actually, the most serious charges are aggravated assault, which in Pennsylvania criminal law basically, you know, pertains to serious bodily injury, any incident resulting in serious bodily injury or death. Involuntary manslaughter, which of course is a form of a homicide, a person causing the death of another. Yep. In involuntary manslaughter, you basically, that would be where my actions might cause a death, even though that was not the intent of my actions. Basically would, because of my reckless disregard for what might happen because of what I did, somebody died. There are simple assault. There's some more basic charges that I think the smart money would say they will likely get convictions on. Furnishing alcohol to minors, hazing, the criminal statute of hazing in Pennsylvania.
I mean, you've got a 19-year-old from Encinitas, California, in this case, charged with right. manslaughter, involuntary, for running a beer pong station.
Sure, that's what it amounts to. Yeah, because what they did was they grouped the fraternity members who were involved in organizing the pledge activities or fraternity leadership, and people who were actually involved in running the gauntlet. They were all hit with the most serious of the charges. A second group that was directly involved in procuring the alcohol was. Charged with sort of a middle range batch of
we'll look at those. Charles Thompson with Penn Live. Stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this hour about the fraternity death at Penn State and what is going on with hazing on American college campuses. There was a raft of cases, 4, 5, 6 years ago. A guy, remember, who died on a bus who was in the band there and running a kind of a gauntlet of being pummeled there. And other cases as well. People thought maybe steps will be taken to tamp this down, to change this. Well, maybe they haven't. Maybe they haven't. 18 charged in the death of Tim Piazza, 8 with involuntary manslaughter, and other serious charges here as well at Beta Theta Pi at Penn State. You can join the conversation this hour. Have you followed this Penn State case? And what do you think of all this legal, all the indictments that have come down here, 18 indicted? Have we made progress on dialing down hazing? Have you seen real efforts to rein it in your community, academic community? Greek life community. What's your experience of campus life and hazing? Have you hazed? Have you been hazed? Why does this go on and on and on? Charles Thompson has covered all this for Penn Live, the case of Tim Piazza, 19 years old and dead. Cordell Davis was the fraternity brother who tried to intervene here, got shoved up against a wall. He was at Good Morning America on Monday, and it was asked why fraternity members across the country, what they should learn from this case, this death, Tim Piazza's.
I would say don't be afraid to speak up. I mean, with like the hierarchy of a fraternity, when you have like the exec with all the power, and then me only being there for a little bit of time, I didn't really have any power. But when you think something is wrong, you shouldn't be afraid to speak your mind.
But it's tough when the peer pressure is there. At the same time, shock at the death of this young man. 12 hours without a call to 911. Evidence tampering charges here, trying to sort of dress Tim Piazza up before he was taken away. There are those in the community. Here was Christina West. She's at Penn State Behrend, telling YourErie.com that she doesn't want Tim Piazza's death to represent Greek life as a whole.
I don't want people to have that negative view of fraternity and sorority life, because to me, that's not what it is.
And some saying, look, let's close this down. Let's just close down some of this Greek life. But here's Penn State Vice President for Student Affairs. Vice President for Student Affairs. This is Damon Sims talking with the Daily Collegian, independent paper at Penn State. This is in April, saying fraternities are here to stay at Penn State.
I can't imagine a fraternity-free Penn State. The fraternity and sorority system is very important to us. It's very important to this university. It's longstanding, has a very positive history. Done a lot of good things for individuals and for the community.
Very important. Good things. Well, maybe. But here, you've got a case, and you have to say another case of serious damage from the hazing that has come and still comes with it. John in Lincolnville, Maine. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. My son pledged this year. He goes to a school in Pennsylvania and talked to me about the hazing experience. A couple of things.
Yeah.
One is, initially called me the first night, and they took him down to a basement, blindfolded him, he and his other pledge people, and started screaming at them. He told me that he was not afraid of being hit, that they had actually promised him that nobody would have physical violence.
Okay.
But you stick young kids in a situation like that, and then you say somebody should stand out and tell somebody, to stand up for the rights of the weak. These kids are terrified. Now, he went through one thing that his school did, though, which I think was really smart, is they assigned a student advisor, one of the fraternities. There are these two pledge masters whose job
okay.
it is
okay.
to terrify the kids. But they also assigned one person who watched, who was a fraternity member higher up who watched to make sure that the pledge masters didn't get out of control. It was sort of like an independent prosecutor appointed just so because... As we all know from all kinds of experiments, after a while, things get out of control,
yeah.
especially with alcohol, which is enormous, the amount of liquor involved. And the only thing I can think of, why, you ask, why is this going on? You know, we have no ceremonies anymore in our modern lives where people can bond. Luke, my son believes that this is a bonding experience, that these will then, because they've gone through this horrific experience, they will be friends for the rest of their lives. It's kind of like, it's almost tribal. But
John, that's your son. And, you know, now you've got 18 guys in Beta Theta Pi there at Penn State who are facing criminal charges, and a bunch of them quite serious criminal charges. Do you have any fear that, I mean, your son may at some level go for the bonding, but could he be the one, you know, a couple of years from now when he's...
I hope not, but that, of course, he could be the one. He could, it's like the sin of omission. He might not be don't think that he would be the one, but he might, you know, there is enormous peer pressure. We all know that. And so in a situation like this, his college actually stopped hazing completely. They closed it down. So they went underground.
He was in Pennsylvania, but not at Penn State, because we heard them saying, no way, no how, we're closing this down.
Yeah, no, at his one, they said, we're not going to close fraternities, we're closing hazing. So they said, we're going to close the hazing down.
I see.
And, but then they snuck it. The kids were discovered going home one day at 5 o'clock in the morning by the campus police.
Yeah.
They checked to see who was what fraternity they belonged to.
Yeah.
As soon as they found out, suddenly the fraternity said no more hazing. So there's no more hazing. My son thought he was scot-free, and then 2 weeks later, under the radar, they reinstituted the hazing again. I don't think you're going to break the hazing, but it's horrifying to a parent. I mean, I didn't want him to do this, I kept saying, what is in it for you? Because he would tell me about all the disgusting things he had to eat. They made him eat, you know, a cold bean. They opened a can of beans. He had to swallow that down. He had to swallow all kinds of disgusting
things. I've seen much worse, John. Much, much worse than that. But I feel your concern as a parent, and I feel for your son, too. He wants in, maybe even wants the bonding experience, but there can be consequences here. 18 kids at Penn State now facing criminal charges. I really appreciate your call. Charles Thompson, I just have you for another minute, then we'll take it national. But what about at Penn State? What's been the follow-on to this? Are there changes in the way they deal with Greek life that are being contemplated or implemented there now?
Well, sure. You know, quickly after Tim Piazza died on February 4th, Penn State implemented a number of new rules for fraternities. First of all, Beta Theta Pi has been knocked out. Their charter's been revoked, and they are done on campus. But going forward, what Penn State is going to try is they are going to limit only 10 alcohol parties per semester at any single fraternity or sorority. They have 15-week semesters, so you get about one every week and a half on average. Alcohol service at those parties must be limited to beer and wine, and the beer and wine has to be served by state-certified bartenders, meaning people who have had a state training in recognizing visibly intoxicated.
So it won't be shotgunning beer. It won't be gauntlets.
Exactly. Right. Theoretically not. And finally, a ban on kegs. So they're trying those things. And they're also going to move Rush from fall semester to spring semester to give incoming students more time to become oriented to campus life. So these are the new rules. They're supposed to be coupled with spot checks, you know, run by the university. They're apparently hiring a kind of a security service that will be empowered to make spot checks and see what's going on in the houses. The other thing that they did immediately after Piazza's death was they actually declared a moratorium on any alcohol-fueled fraternity party for the remainder of this school year. And later in April, they tried to give a test run at a couple houses with these new rules, and it really kind of backfired, and that's discouraging for Penn State, for Greek life in general, for drinking and the drinking culture at universities. But there were one fraternity that they allowed to sort of test drive the new rules, broke every single rule, and they've promptly been put on a 2-year probation themselves.
Not easy to get a handle on this.
You're right, and Penn State is trying to do what they can, short of actually closing out Greek life. But you know, you have to wonder if that may be coming. This sort of thing goes around. I mean, you mentioned there was a Baruch College incident, Northern Illinois, Fresno State, Florida A&M, the band there. I mean, it seems like every year there's an egregious hazing incident.
But criminal charges in a bunch of these at this point, criminal charges now. I mean, there's a young man dead, but there's other lives that may be really Absolutely. Thrown off kilter in a very serious way here for a night of foolishness, maybe youthful foolishness, call it what you will. Charles Thompson has been covering all this at Penn State for Penn Live with us from Harrisburg. Thank you very much for being with us, Charles. We're going to go national.
Sure.
Thank you for joining us.
Okay.
We had kind of thought that maybe people had a handle on this. You think just how rough it could be. Andrew Loos went public with allegations of hazing at Dartmouth, Sigma Alpha Epsilon. This is back in 2012. And he later wrote a book about that experience called Confessions of an Ivy League Frat Boy, a memoir. He was interviewed with Upstate New York's NBC affiliate back in 2012. And he described why he and his pledge brothers were, or how they were required to swim in a kiddie pool of vomit, urine, fecal matter, semen, and rotten food.
All the pledges sit in a circle around the pool, and one by one, when their name is called, they have to climb into the pool and swim around. And at that time, they're kind of baptized, you could say. There's a baptism that goes on where you're given your pledge name.
Okay, there's a baptism. Pretty gross. Nobody dies, I guess. We hope. But there was death at Penn State, and not only there. We want to look at what's going on. Dan Barrett is with us. He's a senior reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education. He spent years covering hazing in fraternities and sororities while at Inside Higher Ed, follows the issue still. Dan Barrett joins us from Washington. Dan, thanks for being with us.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on.
And via Skype from Orono, Maine, Elizabeth Allen is with us, director of the National Hazing Prevention Consortium. It's an initiative using evidence-based research to try and prevent hazing. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks.
Dan, what is the trend here? We heard about these earlier incidents at Baruch in Northern Illinois and Fresno State in Florida, and now Penn State has gotten so much attention. Have measures been taken that have tamped this down, or is it going on as ever?
I think it's probably more accurate to say it's been going on as ever. I think it's been happening, hazing and hazing-related deaths have been happening at a pace of about one or two a year on average, you know, for decades. The first hazing-related death in a fraternity was reported as having taken place in 1873 at Cornell. So it keeps happening. But things have been changing in recent years. You mentioned the Florida A&M incident, which was, of course, not at a fraternity at all. It was
right.
in a marching band. Mm-hmm. And after that, you could say that perhaps awareness had been increased. So we saw that reports of hazing-related deaths spiked from, you know, just a handful to about eight the year after, and then a little lower after that, and then seven in 2014 when there was another kind of rush of attention from the media, from the Chronicle of Higher Ed, from Atlantic Magazine, from Bloomberg and others.
Yep.
And in terms of the response, as you point out, Penn State, in this case, there's been a pretty vigorous prosecutorial response. And that also happened in 2013 at Baruch College, where there were, I believe, 37 fraternity brothers who faced charges, you know, ranging from evidence tampering to third degree murder, I think. Mm. So, yeah, that's been something that has changed. There's been more of an appetite, I think.
Elizabeth Allen, you track this. How do you see the trend line here and the evolution of measures to try and counteract or keep things within some kind of bounds so that not too heavy a price gets paid?
Yes. Well, I was the principal investigator for a national study of student hazing in 2008, where we found that 55% of college students who belong to clubs, organizations, and teams had experienced some form of hazing. And that study was with, you know, based on a survey with more than 11,000 students responding at 53 different colleges and universities across the U.S. Unfortunately, we don't have an update to that study. We haven't had the funding to replicate it, so we don't know empirically if there's, you know, to what extent there's been an increase or decrease in the level of hazing. But we do know, you know, from reports like this one, and, you know, informal reports across the country that indicate hazing is still a very serious problem on our campuses. And, of course, you know, I, as you mentioned, I've been working on the issue of hazing prevention and conducting research related to prevention and what works.
Is it getting better? Have people found prevention? What works, Elizabeth? Is it getting better? Have they found what works?
Well, unfortunately, we do not yet have, we're in the early stages. And so we're making some inroads. We've had some path-breaking work over the past 4 years, and we do know there are some promising data-driven strategies, and we're also borrowing from other fields where there is an evidence base. So, for example, we know that it makes a difference to have trainings on bystander intervention, to do a social norms campaign on campus, to have visible leaders, campus leaders, presidents, vice presidents, and student leaders standing up and taking a strong and visible anti-hazing stance. We know it's important to have clear policies and protocols and to enforce them and also be transparent about that accountability when an organization is found responsible for hazing. So, and outreach to families and friends is also really important because we found in our research that students rarely report to college officials. However, they do share their hazing stories, like we heard from the caller earlier. They do share those stories often with family members and friends. So in terms of prevention, it can be really effective to get the word out, even beyond the campus. And I have to say also that I think, you know, in this case, I think we would be hard-pressed to find any person who would disagree that this was completely, horrific and incomprehensible, and it's just unacceptable behavior. However, there are lots of other kinds of hazing that does occur before it gets to this point. And so we really have to focus prevention efforts on identifying those kinds of behaviors that are so often minimized and overlooked.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the fraternity death at Penn State and what's going on with hazing on American college campuses. You can join us this hour. Do you have this experience? Have you been part of it? Hazed? Been hazed? What would it take to really wind down or end the tradition of hazing? I mean, at Penn State, 19-year-old is dead and 18 young men there charged. Criminal charges here, involuntary manslaughter, aggravated assault, and right on down. Their lives may well be deeply impacted by this as well. Should it be shut down? Can it be shut down? And what's your hazing story? What would have prevented it? You can turn lots of directions and see the damage. 2012, Florida State Attorney Lawson Lamar announced charges against 13. That was in the death of Robert Champion. You remember that Florida A&M University band member, pummeled to death in a hazing incident. When announcing the charges in a press conference against those 13, Lamar spoke out against the very tradition of hazing.
No one could have expected that his college experience would include being pummeled to death, an event that some early on mistakenly called a rite of passage. I have come to believe that hazing is a term for bullying. It's bullying with a tradition that we cannot bear in America.
Cannot bear in America. Florida State Attorney Lawson Lamar. Gary DeVercelli Jr. died in a hazing incident in New Jersey's Rider University. Circumstances sound a lot like what happened to Tim Piazza at Penn State in a documentary produced in 2015 by the Clery Center, National Campus Safety Organization. DeVercelli describes the hazing incident that took his son's life.
He was given a bottle of vodka, and he was told that he had to drink it, to drink all of it. When he passed out, he was just put on a couch. There were some people who could see he was in distress, and they wanted to call for help, but they were told not to. And so he was basically just put on a futon, and he was left to die.
But there are also defenders, and always defenders. 2014, a writer at Jezebel relied on unnamed sources to report that the current then Miss America, Kira Kazantsev, had been kicked out of her Hofstra sorority, Alpha Phi, for her involvement in hazing new pledges. She appeared on Good Morning America, the Miss America, to defend her involvement in sorority hazing.
Under the broad definition of hazing, yes, I was involved with some of those activities while I was at Hofstra, and I came in as an impressionable freshman, and I was hazed.
I was hazed, and it goes on. Dan Baird is with us from the Chronicle of Higher Ed, Elizabeth Allen from the National Hazing Prevention Consortium. David in Detroit, thank you for calling, David. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How you doing today?
I'm okay. I hate to hear these stories about young lives messed up.
You know, I celebrate 33 years, Tom, in a fraternity, and to be honest, it's never going to go away. The pressure to belong in these organizations is so strong that you're going to do whatever you're told in order to be a part of the organization. And then if you speak out against it, you become ostracized, because as a member now that fights against it to try to eliminate that, you have brothers that they kind of bury the things that they do, because we did it 30 years ago. We kind of know the signs of what's going on.
Yep.
But you have these guys that will come out and they'll find, you know, more ingenious ways to get away with stuff.
Is there a way to put some guardrails on this? I mean, I get the urge to bond and all. I get it. And there's a lot of young energy and enthusiasm here. But is there a way to put some bounds on it so people don't get hurt for life or even lose their life?
Well, you have most. I know all organizations have an anti-hazing statement, which is strictly prohibited. And pledging officially as a term has been abolished by the organization. But the issue becomes, there's a process that you go through. Once that process comes through, you become a member. But there are individuals that came through the process differently that feel if you don't come through it the way that they do, you're not going to be respected, you're not going to be accepted. So these young impressionable freshmen, which I was as a 19, 20-year-old, they decide as opposed to being ostracized on campus.
Yeah.
I can't hang out with 30, 40, 50-year-old, you know, brothers that are going to tell me what I'm doing is wrong because I have to go to school with these guys every day.
Yep.
So the issue is it's a paradigm shift that needs to happen from the guys coming in, from the guys that have been around for some time. And those individuals that are doing the hazing, 9 times out of 10, they're not people that are active with the organization. They're people that are members, but they're not active.
What do you mean? They're alums coming back to haze people when they're not even in college anymore?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if they say they don't, they're lying.
That's
Absolutely.
Gross. That's grotesque. Dan Barrett, have you seen evidence of that? David, I appreciate your call from Detroit. Dan, that the hazers are not even active students at the time of the hazing?
Yeah, that's been described several times. Walter Kimbrough, writing in The Atlantic, had mentioned this as well. And I think there are a couple of reasons, as the caller just mentioned. There's this pressure to belong. And while there are structural things and institutional things that universities and the national organizations can do, there is, at the end of the day, this this yearning that people have to belong.
Yeah, but I mean, get over it. When you're not a kid anymore, to come back, like whistle back the sadist, to do a little more while we're at it. Brunswick, Maine, Frank is calling. Hi, Frank, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
A couple of things. I'm a Penn State alum, and I've got a neighbor who used to be a social director at a different house, not Beta.
Okay.
There are a couple of things that to look at here. One is Beta is a very prestigious house, and people really want to get into Beta.
Beta Theta Pi, where Tim Piazza died.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yep.
Not quite like Delta, where you're just drinking. Okay.
Okay.
But
well,
But in this case, it's also I'm a little disturbed that you're making this a hazing incident rather than what it is, which is really neglect of a pledge by the brothers. So that's a kind of a concern of mine. And as far as ending this system,
well, I mean, you got criminal charges, including hazing here. So it's not me. I mean, that's just the way it's come down, Frank.
Yeah, that's the way it's come down. But on the other hand, it could be just as easily neglect. We'll see what happens.
What's the difference if you run the shotgun, get so drunk you fall off the stairs and you fall into the and you bash into the iron rail and you know you're, I mean, you say neglect, but once you've got somebody that drunk and then the care is not given, it's a pretty fine line between neglect and hazing, isn't it?
Not quite. Listen, having gone through with a friend of mine 25 keg weekends at one of the fraternities, you know, this is fairly common that people laying around the house pretty much blanked out. But as far as taking care of some people that have drunk to excess, that's a different matter altogether. That really is neglect rather than hazing.
Frank, I appreciate your call. Elizabeth, when Frank looks to make that distinction between hazing and neglect, what are you thinking?
So I appreciate the question and all the points being made here. I think it's really important in terms of prevention that we work on shifting the culture and reframing hazing, because one of the things we've found in our research is that there's a major disconnect between the experiences of hazing. So as I mentioned earlier, 55% of students report, you know, experiencing behaviors that meet the definition. Yeah, but only 1 in 10 will actually call it hazing. And so there's a major disconnect in how students understand hazing. When we talk with them, we've done hundreds of interviews, we find that some of the things that interfere with the broadened understanding is often they're framing hazing as only in a very limited view. For example, mm-hmm. only involving some kind of physical force and not accounting for the power of coercion and peer pressure that is, you know, for example, was described by Cordell Davis in this particular case.
Yes, when he tried to intervene and got thrown up against the wall. Sasha, Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Sasha, you're on the air. What have you seen?
Hi guys. First of all, it's a tragedy that the life was lost in this process. However, I am a Beta pledge class of 95, and
Beta Theta Pi, like Tim Piazza was. Yeah, okay.
Beta Theta Pi, correct.
Yep.
And I went through the rituals. I pledged. I had the bidding ceremony, and I can tell you, It's an isolated area. It's not common practice. I mean, I come from school where drinking culture is the highest percentage in the nation. I mean, look up Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And this is in the 90s where the rules were fairly lax. We were given a big brother. We were given advisors. we were given pledging rules and also hazing guidelines. We weren't hazed. As a matter of fact, if we saw somebody being hazed and didn't stand up for them, I don't think I would have been a member of my fraternity right now, because we looked up to our leadership in the fraternity.
So what does that mean, Sasha, that you're not worried about it, or you think it's the rare exception, that we shouldn't make too much of it, it's actually A-OK in there? What are you telling us?
I think that there is personal responsibility, and there's also, yes, and there's also a rare exception. As I said, from what is described to me, I am truly shocked, because being a member of that same fraternity and going through the same rituals, I didn't see it.
Sasha, I appreciate your call. Dan Barrett, how does that strike you? Is that what you would hear from fraternity members, sorority members, when you looked into this? Oh, that's the rare exception, and let's not get all in a twist about it?
Yeah, I would say that is both things can be true. It can be true that there is on a broad kind of spectrum a lot of changes that have been made and good things coming out of fraternities. And every time a death like this happens, it's pointless and utterly preventable. These things aren't necessarily mutually exclusive.
Kathy in Evansville, Indiana. Kathy, you're on. What have you seen?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was a sorority member many years ago, but I do want to point out that I hate to just say that hazing happens on college campuses. I have seen or heard of hazing in high schools, men's clubs, as older gentlemen are hazing each other, elementary school kids, where we use the word bullying, but it is hazing. I think it's a societal issue, and I think a caller earlier said it's not going to change because we allow each other to hurt each other and to haze each other as 6-, 7-, 8-year-olds, and a lot of times it's boys will be boys or girls will be girls. But I think until we go to the root of the problem, you're going to continue to have hazing. And I hate to say that it's just collegiate campuses that are at fault here.
I take your point, Kathy. I do. People can be cruel or bully in just about any circumstance. But, I mean, we also know that you've got this sort of ritualized moments on college campuses, and particularly associated with Greek life, not only, but particularly, that get a lot of attention. Elizabeth, have you seen sororities as being as vulnerable to this kind of problem as fraternities, or is it a different profile?
It is a slightly different profile based on the research. We do know that it does happen. It also happens among, college athletes. And as the caller said, we do see hazing in high schools. And so, 47% in our study, 48% in another study of high school students reported experiencing hazing. So they're coming into college potentially with those expectations. So it really is important that we address the problem earlier. And also to reiterate what the caller said, it is it's a community issue. I couldn't agree more that it is something, that we have to look at in the individual groups, but we also have to look more broadly. We have to look at the colleges and universities as communities and the broader communities where we see these kinds of, as Dan said, this occurs on a spectrum. And so, when we see these most egregious cases, we can all agree it's unacceptable. But the fact of the matter is we could prevent it much earlier. We could prevent these senseless tragedies if we were able to help others recognize the hazing that occurs, that's so often overlooked and minimized or simply dismissed as, oh, that's just a tradition or that's just an initiation. When the reality is we can have traditions and initiations that are positive and healthy and don't put people's lives at risk.
Dan Barrett, have you seen, Elizabeth talks about a spectrum here, have you seen some colleges much better than others at creating an environment where this is less of a problem? Have you seen some interventions as more effective than others? I mean, Elizabeth's got this whole list of bystander interventions, social condemnation, clear policies, accountability, outreach to families. Are some better than others? And what works?
I'd say there are a couple levers here. Universities are one lever. I would say one of the biggest levers is actually the national organizations.
Fraternities themselves, their own.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And just for a bit of history, membership really started to crater in the 90s in fraternities because of a raft of lawsuits. And in response, what happened is that the national chapters, the national organizations themselves, really retooled themselves into leadership development programs. And there are some exemplars there. Sigma Phi Epsilon, I believe, is one. And that it had this Balanced Man initiative, which is, among other things, in most cases, outlawed initiation. So there was not this sort of two-tiered membership and this big power differential. But even there, a case that I looked at very, very closely a couple of years ago, the death of a young man named Tucker Hips at Clemson University in SIGEP. He was a member of that, what was thought to be, at least nationally anyway, this model kind of organization. So even there, you have nuances, you have things that can fall through the cracks.
What about, Elizabeth, these criminal charges? You've had them now at Baruch, Northern Illinois, Fresno, Penn State. Do those change the mentality of those currently in Greek life?
Well, I think they certainly draw public attention to the issue, and that's important. But it is not sufficient, and we need to do more. Clearly, we have a lot more distance to travel when it comes to hazing prevention. It is important that there is accountability, that the public is aware of the serious dangers and harm that can occur and has been occurring for decades as a result of hazing. And so, you know, it is important, but again, it's only one piece of a puzzle. And we do know that, you know, prevention can work. We can do better. But, you know, we have to have a more comprehensive approach, a more coordinated approach that involves, you know, multiple different strategies that are evidence-based and data-driven.
Well, a takeaway to bear in mind. A student dead, Timothy Piazza, and 18 young Penn State students now facing criminal charges in Piazza's death. I hope that sticks with people, because that is a lot of lives thrown into some kind of turmoil. I want to thank the two of you for being with us. Elizabeth Allen at the National Hazing Prevention Consortium, with us from Orono, Maine. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Dan Barrett in Washington, the Chronicle of Higher Education. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.